Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 49. My name is Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
I don't know. I threw it to you today instead of...
As I'm drinking my water. Thanks for, you know, narking on me.
Had to put you on the spot. Okay, yes, we know. Everything's a big deal.
Trust me, we know.
We're gonna get to it here in a second. Let's just jump into it because there's no funny banter today. I just want to get into the discussion. Yes. You can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. We only have a couple pieces of small news today. There's one big news.
Big news is today.
Yeah, big news is the discussion. And I wonder if anybody's like, what are they talking about? I have no idea. I haven't been online in 3 days.
You'll find out.
Yeah. But some other cool news that I wanted to talk about right now. The first one is that John Rocco, who has obviously done a whole bunch of the Percy Jackson covers and the illustrated edition, he has some new books coming out. So him and his wife, Haley, are a writer-illustrator duo, and they've written some stuff together before. And I just wanted to read this. I think it's like a Publisher's Weekly little blurb. It says... Stephanie Pitts at Putnam has bought at auction Wild Places, written and illustrated by husband and wife team John Rocco, How We Got to the Moon, and Haley Rocco, How to Send a Hug, a picture book biography of British broadcaster and conservationist David Attenborough, which showcases how Earth has changed over one person's lifetime and offers hope that humans may restore the balance of nature through rewilding our planet. Grover would love that.
It's so appropriate.
Yeah. Publication is set for spring 2024. Pitts also acquired world rights for the first four books in a new picture book series, Meet the Wild Things, introducing young readers to lesser-known endangered animals from the perspectives of the animals themselves, with publication beginning in summer 2024. So
That's really cool.
And yeah. I've seen stuff from How We Got to the Moon, and I think also How to Send a Hug. And it's, you know, John Rocco's art style is really awesome. We kind of are very familiar with it.
Yeah.
So that's just really cool. And I wanted to bring that up because they're awesome.
We like supporting awesome people.
Yes, we do. And then, of course, Serwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting is out now. That's very exciting. And Rosanne Brown seems to be having a blast going on her tour. This is the first in-person tour she's had in like 3 years. So she's very excited.
As a lot of people are.
Yeah, so that's really cool. If you're still not sure if you want to pick up that book, you can read an excerpt on Reed Riordan. I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes. Also, Pahua and the Soul Stealers paperback is out now, so if you're waiting for the paperback to come out instead of getting the hard copy, then there you go.
Today's your day.
Yeah, today is your day. And lastly, on Reed Riordan, Aphrodite wrote A Guide to Love.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that's probably gonna be hilarious. Yeah, so apparently, like, the OTP timelines that they've been putting up, the people behind Reed Riordan were like, we've got a lot of things on our mind, especially love, and it just felt like the appropriate time to talk to Aphrodite and get, you know, her advice on love. And some of these are hilarious. The first one is literally titled Learning How Not to Share, which I feel like, you know, love is war.
Nice.
I don't know if we should be taking love advice from Aphrodite,
right?
But yeah, so there's that. But as wonderful as all of that is, that was under 5 minutes, Kristen.
Bing, bang, boom. We're just keeping it moving right to the good stuff.
Yeah. As wonderful as that is, the big story of the day is the D23 Expo event where Rick and the trio got to go on stage and they gave us a trailer. And this is my public apology to Kristen for ever doubting her that they weren't going to put out any sort of trailer. You know what? That aside, and I'm really glad we have it, I still am shocked just because, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, the current release date for the show is 2024.
Yeah.
To get a teaser trailer this early is...
Wow. I think part of it, part of the reason I'm not shocked, part of the reason I expected it, is because I expected to get exactly the kind of trailer we got, where it's all the human side of things, it's all the stuff that they had to already shoot, because they've shot the first two episodes, so I kind of figured that we'd get something very bare bones with some iconic moments, some iconic, you know, scenes, or like, just an idea of a scene or something like that, because... That's the stuff they can show us now. Like, they don't have special effects done. They don't have battle scenes done. They don't have monsters formulated and ready to go. So, like, I had a feeling this would be exactly what we'd get.
Yeah.
And as the next year and hopefully year and a half is all it is, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully it's January 2024 and we get it right away. But, yeah, hopefully over the next, year and a half or so, we'll get slowly some ideas of what the monsters look like and then get, you know, a formal trailer and maybe some stills, and then we'll get more casting, of course, too. But, this was basically exactly what I expected, and I'm like, yes, okay,
alright. I also think that this was really smart because it introduces the visual of the show to both book fans and to people who haven't read the books. So you kind of, like, even though it doesn't really give away a ton of, like, the plot, you get an idea of, okay, this kid's a demigod. It's really dangerous being a demigod. We get to see camp. We get to understand that, you know, maybe Percy is kind of this newcomer that people are unsure of. And then that's it. Like, then it's over. But it's kind of enough to whet your appetite. I think it'll hold people over for a long time.
Yeah.
At least we got something. I'm still kind of surprised we haven't gotten any god casting.
That's just a bit of a surprise for me, too.
Yeah. But I'm, you know... I'll take the teaser trailer over that. I can wait a little longer for the casting.
Yeah, my only guess is that they're doing as much... They're getting as much banked with the kids as they can because the kids' time is limited because they're minors. So they're working ahead and getting as much of that done as they can. And then once they cast the gods, they'll, like, shoot all of the stuff with everybody as much as they can all at once. You know what I mean? Like, kind of try and get the kids and the gods stuff done so that they can move on to the rest of the kids shooting stuff later. So it's like, I can see them kind of like front heavy and back heavy is going to be just the kids work.
Right.
And then have the gods on set for 3-4 weeks or something and like have them working all together for a short amount of time and then get the gods back out of there so that they can continue to work with the kids. That was my guess.
And I think it's kind of good, you know, they obviously needed to get the trio and, like, Clarice and all of them pretty early on, but to wait a little bit longer to kind of see how the kids are and to maybe match them up with the right adults in those roles, then, you know, I'm happy for them to take a little bit of time to be able to do that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, so you didn't get to watch any of the video, right? Like,
no, I've seen the trailer, but I didn't get a chance to watch the D23 actual event.
Which is good, because I wanted to kind of, like, for our listeners, just explain, you know, what it was like. And, I mean, it was very brief. I did expect it to be a little bit longer to have, like, an interview section. But, so this was the Disney-branded television panel, basically. So there were a lot of different products that they were showing off. And Percy wasn't the first one on stage. I think he was, like, 3 or 4 in line. And American-born Chinese, by the way, I think fans of Percy Jackson would really like that because it's based in Chinese mythology and the Journey to the West story and the Monkey King and all of that has one of my favorite actors, Daniel Wu, in it, has Michelle Yeoh, and I don't remember his name, but also from Everything Everywhere All at Once, the husband, like the two of them. They're both in this as well. Yeah, he was really good. He got the biggest cheer on stage, by the way.
That's awesome.
Maybe even bigger than Michelle Yeoh, so that's saying something. Yeah. But it looked really good. So that's also a TV series that is coming to Disney, possibly Disney Plus original. I'm not entirely sure about that. But I think fans of Percy Jackson will like it. And they were running late, and I was sitting at my computer for like an hour before they came on, and I was like, just give me what I want. But it was kind of fun, and Raven Simone and Lily Singh were the hosts for that, and they were kind of funny and doing their own thing. And then they brought Rick out, and, well, before that, I should say, they did, like, an intro montage, and we got two Percy Jackson shots in that intro montage, and I was kind of surprised by that because it was video. Like, it wasn't just a picture, it was actual video. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh no, am I gonna have to admit Kristen was right?
I know, it's sometimes hard.
It's not that hard. I was very happy that we got the trailer, but I wanted to point out these two shots first. So the first one is basically Percy in, I believe his, is that his Yancey uniform? Like, he's got a little sweater on.
Yeah, it sort of seems like it, yeah.
No.
Well, there's some kids behind him.
Look, he's wearing his necklace.
Ooh.
This is after.
He is. Well, because there's kids behind him that look like they're in uniforms.
Yeah.
Like,
because I thought this was going to be outside the Met, like, you know, the opening part at the Met Museum. But he's wearing his necklace. So that's potentially...
Where could this be?
Later? But, like, why wouldn't he be wearing...
Could this be...
Because that's not the outfit he was wearing during that still. Or, like, when they were traveling New York City to go on the quest.
How... I'm trying to remember how Lightning Thief... No, they wouldn't have shot... I was thinking, like, maybe it's, like, a shot from, like, the end of the book, because he'd have his necklace, and it kind of looks like old buildings, New York City-esque kind of thing.
If they were doing stuff on the New York City set.
Right, and that's, it just makes me wonder if maybe they did, like, one or two shots that they told him, like, these are the end of the book, you've been through the whole thing, you know. It would be weird, because as far as we know, all they've shot are the first two episodes, but they may have done stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like he definitely has had a chance to clean up.
Yeah, he's wearing, like, a button-down shirt, which is why I thought he was, like, on his school trip.
Could this be... No. Huh. I don't know. I really don't know where this is. Because it's not Vegas. St. Louis?
I guess it could be. I didn't think that would be his outfit.
Right, me neither.
Yeah, like, why isn't he just wearing, like, a t-shirt?
Could this be, like, a dream sequence?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is really weird. Well, these little umbrellas and the soda sign behind him make it look like it's some sort of, like, theme parky, it's something for tourists. Like,
yeah.
So it makes me think, like, somewhere, like, St. Louis Arch or, I kept thinking Hoover Dam, but that's another book.
Yeah.
I'm a little far ahead of myself there. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it kind of does look New York-like.
That's what I keep going.
It could just be a scene in New York that we don't know about. Maybe it's a new scene or something. Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, you're right. Like, that doesn't look like the outfit I've seen him in, or at least not that I'm remembering.
Right, from the quest.
Yeah. I don't know. Unless maybe this is a different necklace? Maybe this is Yancey Academy? Maybe he's wearing, like, a medallion or something from his mom? Or he's just a normal kid wearing a medallion and his necklace is different? I don't know.
Maybe that just feels so...
It's I don't like that explanation.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't gonna say, but...
If he's wearing a necklace, it can only be the Camp Half-Blood necklace. Yeah, no, I agree with you there. This is an interesting quandary.
Yeah, I just scrolled back to the picture of them where he's wearing his necklace and he's got on, like, a green plaid shirt and that New York City, like, subway gray t-shirt that he was wearing. Because I'm pretty sure that was Leah's outfit that she was wearing while they were out in New York City. Like, we saw a video of them for, doing that. But I don't know. If you guys have ideas, let us know. This is literally the first thing we decided to talk about, and I did not realize that it was going to be a whole conundrum. But I'm very curious where we can place that picture in that scene. And it was all that. The video was just him, the breeze kind of blowing his hair back and him looking concerned into the camera or into the far distance. So, and then a little bit later, we also got this shot of what is very clearly Sally kind of holding Percy's face. And they're in the rain. And it's got to be when she's saying goodbye, when she's about to be taken.
They're in the woods, yeah. Like, yeah. First of all, I can't even see her face.
No.
But I'm picturing, because I know the actress from Big Little Lies.
Right.
And I'm picturing her knelt down talking to him, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she's going to be amazing. Like, I can't even see her face, and I'm already like, I bought, I'm in.
Becky keeps saying that when we see them together, we're going to cry. Like, she keeps tweeting about that, and I'm like, I have too many emotions already.
But can I just say that, for me, in profile, this doesn't look like Walker. Like,
really?
For some reason, my eyes are, like, face blind to him in this... At this angle. Like, for some reason, my brain's like, that's not Walker. Who is that? It's Walker. Yeah. It's just with the wet hair and the shadows, it makes his nose look bigger, and it just, for some reason, it messes with my brain, and I can't.
Because his hair is usually very fluffy, so, like, with it being wet like that.
It's just really funny, because my brain is like, this is not him. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be so good.
So we got a lot of clips from a lot of different shows. That was obviously the Percy Jackson stuff. I was cheering. I was by myself. Like, nobody was around, but I was so excited. And then Rick comes out onto stage and introduces the trio. And behind them, we have key art from the show. And it is basically the Hermes Cabin in the woods, and it has the Percy Jackson and the Olympians Disney logo over the top of it. This is just concept art. If you look very closely, it's clearly just like a drawing, like an imagining of it.
You can see the people look really fake.
Yeah. But, I mean, the rest of it looks really real.
It does.
I actually didn't realize it wasn't a still image until I saw the people on there.
Yeah.
But the green flag hanging from the top is very clearly like Hermes's staff.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's a big building, which makes sense because the Hermes Cabin holds all of the unclaimed demigods. They need a lot of room.
Yeah.
And once you see that compared to the other cabins, which look much smaller, like Percy's, you can tell, like, I just love that they thought about that, you know? Like, this is going to be a different size. Maybe they put additions on it.
Well, like, I'm curious if, like, I mean, I know they're demigods and not wizards or something, but, like, I'm curious if maybe the cabin's kind of, like, very... A little based on their occupancy.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not a magical show, but it is kind of.
No, but the gods have powers, right. So I wonder if
there's a ton of people if, like, the building just gets bigger. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it doesn't shrink back down. Maybe it stays big, but, like, if they are in desperate need of more room in the Hermes cabin, it just...
Or they wake up one morning and, like, Hephaestus has just added an addition to their house or something. I could believe something like that. Yeah.
I do love the idea and the shape and the build of these,
It's
though.
So beautiful. There's vines everywhere. It looks very earthy. It looks like a cabin you would find out in the middle of the woods. And
but
it
also
looks
suspiciously
stately.
Like a college campus.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, it feels a little bit like... Yeah, like, mm-hmm. college campus building, but it's also, like, a cabin in the woods. It's so weird.
We both have some more thoughts on the cabins, which we'll get to when we get to the trailer, but I just wanted to mention here that the panel went by so fast. Like, it was, you know, 30 seconds of a panel. Rick came out. You could tell he was really excited. He accidentally called Walker Walter and was like, where did that come from?
Walter Johnson. just start it now.
Yeah.
He can call them all weird names the entire promotional tour.
But it was... You could just tell how excited he was, and he mentioned that this was the first time the trio has been on stage in a public forum together. Aww. And I was like, oh no, I'm feeling some things, I've got some emotions. So that was really cool. And I wasn't able to, like, write down exactly what the trio had said, because they each had a little bit to say about themselves and their characters, because it went by very fast. I don't know if this panel will be online. I haven't seen it anywhere, so I don't know if, like, their little clips will.
I'll bet you it'll probably be on Disney Plus. They love to put all this kind of stuff on Disney Plus. I'll bet you there'll be a D23 section, if not tomorrow or today, next week. Like, I'm sure it'll probably end up
there. It could even end up in, like, some behind the scenes montage video later when we're done with the first season or something like that.
Yeah, so. No, because I would like to see it. I'm poke around to see if I can find it later.
That would be great. And if we find it, we'll put it up on our Twitter.
Yeah.
So, Ariane described Grover as the protector of the group, which I don't think is too surprising. Leah introduced herself as Annabeth, and the crowd cheered. It was so loud. And I just was like, okay, all right, people are, like, really here for this. And she was talking about how Annabeth is really smart, you know, she's Wisdom's daughter and all that kind of stuff. And then Walker also got a huge cheer, obviously. And this was the quote that he said that, thank goodness, I think Becky retweeted it from somewhere, because I really liked what he said. He says, I'm just incredibly grateful to portray one of Rick's characters. We all are. I promise you, I will always try my hardest every single day to bring Percy Jackson to life for all of us. I know. Don't make that face. You're going to make me cry.
Like, it's just so perfect.
The thing is, he was, like, really kind of, I don't want to say somber, because that is, like, sad, but he was, like, very serious when he said this, and you could just tell, like, he really meant it. And, like, he kind of, he loves this story. He's read it a bunch of times. He was a fan before he got cast. But I think, like, in addition to that, he understands how much this means to everybody. And as, like, a 12, 13-year-old kid, like, that's got to be a lot of weight to carry. But I feel like I'm not worried about him carrying it.
No, you know?
Like, I think that he can handle this. And I think that with Rick and the others around him as a good support system, you know.
Well, and I think that's one of the good things about Percy Jackson. Yes, he's the title character. Yes, there's a lot of weight on his shoulders. But there's a lot of people and a lot of his peers that will be helping him carry that weight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's definitely a little more weight on him, but, like, there's a lot of weight on, you know, Leah and Arian and Dior. And, like, there's a nice group for him to kind of sit, you know, to be with, to take on some of this load with him. And I'm glad that it's not, like, I'm thinking, like, with the Ryan Reynolds movie, which the name of it, I cannot remember.
Adam Project.
Like, he's the only kid.
Yeah.
So it's, like, him and a bunch of adults, and they don't really understand what it's like to be a kid with this much pressure. So, like, here, at least, he's got a core group of kids his own age who know what he's going through. Like, they can kind of go through it together. And I think that'll be really bonding for them, and also just, like, a little more, like, healthy, a little less...
Yeah.
A little less pressure-packed for him and him alone.
And I think, like Harry Potter, the trio is going through it together.
Yeah.
So that kind of, the spotlight is very much on him, but it's on all of them.
Yeah.
And Arian is a little bit older, so hopefully, like, you know, him and Walker are becoming friends, and he can kind of be there for him a little bit, and... Yeah, I'm so excited. So that was pretty much that for, like, the actual panel part, because they rolled the trailer, and then by the time, like, they came back onto the stage, the hosts were there again, ready to introduce the next segment. So, like, that was it.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of okay with that, you know.
Yeah.
Again, was not expecting this teaser, so I was like, I'll take it. It's fine.
I mean, if we think about it, if it's not coming out till 2024, if that's, like, tentatively, that's the date we have, it could move. We should have a Comic-Con in which they will have a lot of work done.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all of it, but, like, I can see a Comic-Con next summer where we're getting a full trailer and, you know, stills, and they're just, like, showering us with info and stuff. You know, like,
Yeah. And they've released whole episodes ahead of stuff at Comic-Con. I mean, it would really depend on when they're planning. Because they usually do that, like, just a little bit earlier than when the show is coming out.
Like, it's coming out in September, and they release it in July.
Right.
Not, they give us an episode in July, and it doesn't come out until March.
Yeah. That would be a little much. But they could give us the first 10 minutes.
Right.
They've definitely done stuff like that before, so it's all very possible.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Okay, let's get to the teaser trailer.
Yes.
So the length is 52 seconds, which is not bad for a teaser. Sometimes they're only 30 seconds, so this was a little bit of a substance. There's stuff to look at, and let me tell you, I miss breaking down trailers and stuff and, like, looking at all the little details. There's
Teen
not
Wolf.
A lot of...
She's well-practiced.
Yeah,
Teen Wolf,
Harry Potter, you know, like, those things. I haven't been able to really do that in a long time. Marvel stuff, too, but because I don't get a lot of the comic references all the time, it's not quite as satisfying. But this, I'm like, I know Percy Jackson.
So, let me at it.
Yeah.
Like, here we go.
So the first thing I want to talk about is Walker's voiceover, and I'll just read what he says in the trailer. Look, I didn't want to be a half-blood. Being a half-blood is dangerous. It's scary. Most of the time, it gets you killed. If you think you might be one of us, my advice is, turn away while you still can. Believe whatever lie your mom or dad told you about your birth. Try to live a normal life. Because once you know what you are, they'll sense it too. And they'll come for you. Don't say I didn't warn you.
If I didn't know this was Percy Jackson, I'd swear this was a horror movie.
Yeah, right? I mean, it could be. Put some scary music behind that, right? And it would work. So, look, I didn't want to be a half-blood. Don't say I didn't warn you. And a couple other lines are directly from the book. Mm-hmm. But they've clearly changed it because in the book it's like, if you're reading this, close the book now, walk away. And they changed it for the TV show. And I don't mind at all. I think it works really well. It sounds really good. Do you think that this voiceover will actually be in the show?
It could go either way. Teasers sometimes are a little bit off what they're planning. Like, they give you something in the teaser and then, it's not actually in the show. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a possibility. I could see them using this over, like, maybe a montage in the first episode or something, just to kind of get you acclimated. I don't think we're going to get Percy voiceover the entire series.
I don't think so either.
Like, if that's if anybody's concerned about that, I really don't think they're going to go that route. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people think that that can be a bit of a cheat, because then you can do anything with voiceover, and, like, it can kind of feel a little off sometimes. And since the books don't really give us, like, we read them from Percy's perspective, but it's not like we get a ton of exposition from Percy all the time in his head. Like, we don't know everything Percy's thinking every minute of the books. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes things are a little bit up in the air, even to us, about what he's up to. So I don't think they'll go the voiceover route the whole way, but I think maybe to, like, get you into the story, they give you a little bit at the beginning and then, you know, kind of let it go from there.
My other thought was, I kind of feel like this would work for the closing scene in the finale of the first season.
Hmm.
You know, like, now that he's gone through all of this stuff, he's like, look, I didn't want to be a half-blood, and then he ends it with, don't say I didn't warn you. You know, roll credits, and especially, like, I feel like that would be a good, you know, there's more to come kind of feeling to that.
Yeah.
Now that we've kind of experienced his whole story. But I wouldn't be that mad if they just use this for the teaser trailer, because it's a great introduction, you know, and it pulls something from the books, and I think book readers will like it, and non-book readers will kind of get a better idea of what the show's about.
I agree, yeah. I'm really okay if it's not in the show, but I can see how they could work it in if that was their intention.
Yeah, too. Definitely. So next we just get some, you know, the voiceover is throughout. We don't get any other dialogue from any of the characters, and it's just kind of shots moving through basically Camp Half-Blood. So we get a shot of some trees. We get the signs leading to camp. We see stables, archery, and camp cabins. Those are the only arrows we see. Some people are very upset that they used the S symbol, like in the Greek alphabet, it's S, but it looks like an E to us. Mm-hmm. They used that on the signs. So they're using,
like, Sigma?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So for stables, the E in stables is Sigma. So it's actually like stables, you know, like it doesn't actually read right. So some people are mad about that. I get why they did it. It's an artistic choice to make it look more Greek, even though it doesn't read right technically. But
that's kind of funny.
Yeah. But honestly, I don't really care.
Maybe it was the sign morphing into ancient Greek.
It could be. Or just, you know, some kid was like, hey, this will look good, you know? Right. Like, I could believe something like that.
It's true. It's true.
Okay, so the next shot is Percy in his cabin with his bedroll and sleeping bag and a backpack on, like, his actual cot or whatever. And he's pulling his camp necklace out of his backpack. And obviously it doesn't have any beads on it or anything like that. But this is probably him getting to his cabin for the first time and just being like, what's in my bag? Oh, I guess I have to wear this necklace now, which is kind of funny.
Help me put on this necklace that has no beads.
Yeah. And then we get a shot of him walking alongside a little pond or marsh area, and it kind of seems like everybody is staring at him. So I don't know. I feel like this is prior to him being claimed.
Well, I'm curious if maybe it's like part of the claiming scene. Could you see above his head? Like, was it cut like you couldn't see above his head? Or maybe they just haven't done the digital effect, so they were like, this will confuse them.
Well, no, because he was definitely on his way to somewhere. It wasn't like it was during the capture the flag scene.
Okay.
So I'm thinking maybe it's after.
Well, okay, we know even before he's claimed, they all think he's a child of the big three. Like, because that's why Grover and Kyren have been protecting him at school. Like, that's why they're both.
Because he was powerful. So
right.
But I don't know if the other kids necessarily, like, had that inkling. But he stayed in the Hermes cabin one night, didn't he?
Yes.
So this could be day two. This could be potentially after. Okay, here's my thought. It's either everybody's staring at him because he's the new kid on his way to where he's going. But the part where he walks up to the Poseidon cabin later kind of matches up with this scene.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that maybe he's been claimed now and it's post him staying in the Herbie's cabin. He's heading toward Poseidon. Everybody's like, he's a son of Poseidon.
That kind of, I was just kind of rewatching that bit, and I do see what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, I think it could be that kind of thing.
Yeah, so this could be from episode two then. Well, no, probably still episode one. I keep thinking episode one is like chapter one, or like, but I don't think.
It's not quite that literal.
Yeah.
It's only eight episodes, so 20-some chapters gets condensed to eight, so obviously, yes, each episode is more than one chapter.
During this, we also kind of get a shot of the Camp Half-Blood t-shirts, which are a little bit of a different design than what we've seen before. It actually has the Greek meander design in a circle around the Pegasus, which, like, if you've bought just generic Camp Half-Blood shirts before, it's just the Pegasus with Camp Half-Blood along the top.
Yeah.
So this is pretty cool. It's a little bit of a different design. Obviously, I'm going to buy one as soon as they are available because...
Yeah, I like these.
I cannot help myself. It gives it a little bit more of a design, I think.
Yeah.
Makes it a little bit more dynamic.
Yeah. No, I like them.
Yeah. Next, we get a shot of some owls in the trees, and I really love the dramatic music here. And it, like, I don't want to keep comparing things to Harry Potter, but I think some of the trailers, the music in Harry Potter, just the way that they ramp up the drama and stuff, mm-hmm. like, it gave me that same kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And in Rick's blog, which he posted on September 10th, he said, by the way, those owls in the trees, those are legit owls who just happened to be in the trees on the day we were filming at camp. I think Athena was giving us her blessing. Obviously, this is a super short, super early look at the series. We don't even get to see Annabeth and Grover yet in these shots, but all in due time, and when you see what else is coming, wow, it will be worth the wait. But yeah, those owls were just there.
They just showed up and said, I want to be in a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be in a TV show, but still.
I mean,
that's so cool.
How perfect. And they fit so well. It just looks great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I really love
that. They didn't even have to pay for them. They just showed up on set. And they're like, all right, get footage. Somebody get footage.
Yeah. That's got to be pretty cool when you're shooting out in the woods. Like, you kind of just have to do what's there and, like, try to get what you can. And if something interesting shows up, like, try to capture it.
That's
I love
really
that.
Neat.
So the next shot is of Clarice. And I believe this kind of looks like the capture the flag shot, maybe before they start, like it's, you know, the two sides kind of lining up, them having maybe like a meeting where they're like, okay, try not to kill each other, and they go off in different directions. So we see Dior Goodjohn as Clarice with her spear. She's got her helmet on. She's got her chest armor and everything. It all looks great. There's a bunch of other demigods in varying degrees of armor with different weapons kind of set out behind them. Everybody looks pretty diverse, which, you know, I think is great, obviously. Somebody said they thought the kid in the green cap was Luke, But Luke is on Percy's side in Capture the Flag, and I kind of feel like that was maybe Ares and Athena cabins. Like, I kind of wonder if the Ares people have the helmets and the Athena cabins don't.
The only reason I could think maybe it could be him on the wrong side would be if, like, it was actually after the moment that Percy is claimed. Like, maybe this is all kind of at that moment. And,
like, they're just staring at him.
They just kind of, like, backed up out of the thing, and so they're all kind of mixed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Because you have some kids lounging on trees in the back, which is why I feel like it's, like, a meeting kind of thing, but...
You're right. Like, it doesn't feel like something crazy just happened. Yeah. They feel kind of relaxed. Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting.
But I'm terrible with faces. People said that looked like him, like his face shape and stuff, so... Okay, I just showed the picture to Kristen. You don't think it's Luke?
I'm not sure. He just seems a little more slender, I think, than the Luke I've seen. Like, the actor who's playing Luke that we've seen. I feel like he's got a little more broad bulk to his shoulders than that guy seems to have. Like, his neck seems really slender as opposed to... I don't know. But it doesn't quite look like Luke to me. It could be... It's really far back. It's in the, you know, he's kind of in the distance, and he's not really looking at the camera, and the cap hides his face. So it could be him, but...
And also, like, why would he be behind Clarice and not, like, so maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but that's the kind of stuff we're here to speculate about.
Right?
So
that's the fun stuff.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention about this shot was that at least two of the campers have glasses, and as a glasses-wearing human... It made me really happy. I was not expecting that to, like, affect me at all. Aww. But I was like, the one girl looks so cute in her little glasses.
I just saw her, like, when I was rewatching it this past minute. And, yeah, she's freaking adorable. Yeah. And, yeah.
I really like it. So the next shot is Walker once again walking alongside the marsh / pond. And this is a bit of a wider shot. We see three cabins in the background. The one all the way to the left, you can't tell what it is. There are no flags or anything like that, so not a clue. The center one is most definitely the Apollo cabin because you can see a lyre-shaped window at the top. But the symbol on the flags, I didn't entirely know what that was.
Okay. Well, because I'm curious if we can identify any cabin... can't we look at the map of how they were laid out?
Well, that's what I was wondering, but... So, here's the thing.
Hold on, let me see. Sorry, Apollo, I didn't actually look.
Apollo is the center cabin, and the one next to it is probably Athena, because it has a number 6 on it.
Yeah.
But that other... The flag for the Apollo cabin, that's not a number. Wait, is that 11? No, because it's like an upside-down U, almost. I can't tell what it is.
Yeah, it looks almost like an upside-down tuning fork. That's all I can say.
Yeah. But there's clearly a 6 on the other one, and it has spears and a helmet, so more than likely that is going to be Athena's cabin.
Okay, we're doing a deep dive here. What do you think it is? 11?
No, it's a tuning fork. It's the letter N.
I was looking up Greek symbols to see if we can figure out what it was.
And I tried looking up, like, Camp Half-Blood map, and, like, I don't know... Yeah, I mean, that is definitely Apollo.
So I'm wondering if it's, like, maybe not, like, a letter, but it's maybe it's just a symbol of... And for him, the harp is kind of one of Apollo's symbols, so maybe rather than being an actual Greek letter that represents him, like, it's just that.
Because I found, like, this is how he has it on his website, which doesn't really give you anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are no numbers on here. Athena here is sandwiched between Demeter and Artemis.
Okay.
And Apollo is all the way on the other side. And Apollo's next to Ares.
Well, the other problem is, it's a TV show, and they get to make all their own decisions.
They could totally change things.
Yeah, like, they could have positioned the cabins in a different order because of this reason or that reason, or they wanted this or whatever. So, as much as we could try and puzzle it out, it could just be anything.
But I'm pretty sure it's Apollo and Athena.
Yeah.
We don't have enough information about the one on the left to figure out what it is.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, they could absolutely just change that. So the next shot is Walker approaching the Poseidon cabin. And this is where I wanted to just be like, so what do you think of the cabins?
Yeah. First of all, I really like the size and, like, him, like, approaching the Poseidon cabin. I, for some reason, to this day, I picture these tiny little cabins like I stayed in when I went to camp. And I just picture them with a Greek symbol on them. And that's camp. Like, that, what are you talking about? These are, like, buildings. These are, and honestly, it fits better to what they are. This is Poseidon's cabin. He's not going to let it be this teeny little wood structure building with a couple of pretend Greek columns in the front and a flag that has his symbol. No, it's going to be a really well-constructed Greek column standing up in front of you, like, massive thing. And I do, I love it. Honestly, I love it. And even with the key art of the Hermes cabin, like, I just love the scale of these buildings.
Yeah.
I think it lends something extra to them. Like, rather than just being a row of cabins in a glen in the middle of, like, I like that they're kind of tucked into the woods, that they've got, like, a well-trod path kind of leading down there, you know, as Walker's walking along the banks of this swampy river area. Like, you can see that this is the path they all walk. So it just feels really cool.
Yeah.
And so I'm on board.
All of the cabins look like there are at least two floors. And that's something that never occurred to me. I always kind of assumed that it would be one floor with, like, you know, bunk beds smashed in there and not a lot of room. And I mean, for Hermes' cabin, like, as big as it is, it probably is still very
has,
full.
It probably still has bunk beds on both floors and,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. The scale of the cabins is really impressive and I think lends more reality to the show. It looks a little bit larger than life. It doesn't look like something you could knock down. You know, it looks like something that's been there for a while. And the flags and the decoration and, you know, these aren't simple things. They are proud establishments representing the gods and their children.
Well, and just thinking about it, like, thinking about how Percy relates to his cabin later and how, you know, how Annabeth feels about her cabin and how Hermes and all, you know, all of Hermes' kids feel about their cabin, like, it makes a lot of sense that Percy's is like this mausoleum-esque kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's made of stone and it's big and it's echoey. And of course it has to be that. It can't be this little tiny cabin that my brain's been picturing all these years. Mm-hmm. Like, this makes so much more sense for why it's going to feel empty all by himself.
Yeah.
And why, you know.
Oh, God, that's so depressing.
Well, and why, like, Tyson moving in makes such a big impact. Because Tyson's a big guy, so, like, him taking up any space is going to make it feel less lonely and less, you know. And, like, him walking across the room to check an iris message is going to feel big. And it's just, it makes so much more sense to my brain.
Yeah.
It just does.
I really love it. I'm really impressed by all of the visuals,
like,
really.
I can just picture not just every Athena kid having a bed, which is previously, they had, like, a bed and a trunk in my brain. But, like, with that, with a little more room in their cabin, because it's a two-floor structure and all of that, they each have a desk. They each have bookshelves. Like, I can see some of these cabins, the kids having a little more area to themselves rather than it just being a bunk bed. And that's all you get, and your bag hangs from it, and your trunk sits at the bottom. Like, you know, like, I like that there's a little more to these, and I think they'll be able to make the spaces a little more personal. Like, Annabeth's lived nothing but at camp, basically, for 7 years.
She would be established.
Yeah, like, there's no way she only lives in her bed. Like, she would have a desk, a bookcase, whatever. And they're, you know, children of battle strategy and wisdom. And they're not going to just go to the library or the big house when they need a book. Like, it's going to be in their cabin. So I love the reality of this. It makes my brain make a lot of things make a lot more sense. And yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. The last shot before the credits really finally roll. There are no credits, but, you know, the final title and everything like that is basically Sad Percy in the rain with some lightning flashing. And this very much seems to match the scene where Sally was holding his face in her hands, probably saying goodbye, and is basically captured by Hades, like killed, quote unquote, by the Minotaur and captured by Hades.
The look on his face gives me my mom was just taken. Yeah. She dead. That's what I get out of it. So I'm assuming it kind of has to be from that scene. Mm-hmm. And isn't it like black and white, or it's like the color is a little
dark. Yeah. It's dark. Yeah. Yeah. So that's that on the teaser. I think, you know, I'm really surprised that we got it, but really happy. I'm really impressed. Even though nothing was given away, I still feel like there was so much to look at. This is, like, best case scenario in my mind, you know?
They really
didn't have to work to give us this stuff right this early, but I'm so glad that they did.
Yeah, I'm a little less surprised, obviously. I thought this was what was coming, and I'm honestly, I couldn't be happier about what they gave us, because... Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot to, like, pick apart, but there's just enough to kind of get us all excited, to give us things to talk about. Like, we just spent 40 minutes-ish talking about the cabins, basically, and this path that he's walking and what moments in the book these are.
40 minutes talking about a 52-second
trailer. Like, it gives you a lot to just kind of hold on to while we will continue to probably get casting notices. And, you know, and it just lets you continue to imagine what they've got in store for us so that when we finally start seeing big stuff, like the big trailers and stills and big footage, and, you know, like, we'll start to get creature images probably in a year. Yeah. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it'll just be one little bit at a time, and it's gonna be absolutely amazing the whole way through. So, yeah. But this is a great start, honestly. A really, really great start.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Rick did, like I said, post on his blog September 10th. It was basically just sharing the trailer, talking a little bit about the D23 panel. Nothing big. I read you the thing about the owls, so that's pretty much it for there. But Becky had a really cool thread about the tone of the trailer and the tone of the show that I wanted to share. She says, good question for today. Is the TV show going to be very dramatic and dark like we see in the trailer, or will it be lighter with the dry humor we see in the books? Simple answer is both. Complicated answer, see thread. Being middle grade books, Rick's novels are easy to read and why some six-year-olds dive into them. But another reason they are easy to read is because Rick wanted kids that found reading boring and difficult to be able to read his children's books. Our kids. I hate threaded tweets, so props for getting this far. Our show is being designed for a family audience and why Disney is the perfect home for it. The darker, more mature side of Rick's books will be pushed forward while also keeping the fun and joy that made his books appealing. Walker describes the tone perfectly. Percy is funny, he's witty, he's very sarcastic, he's very hot-headed. In other words, we allow Percy to be Percy in our show. Arian does Grover's humor perfectly and also fear and sadness. He is a true blue protector on and off the stage. Yeah.
Feels. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things Leah joyfully told us after she was cast is that she inherited her brother's room filled with Rick's books when he went off to college. I am going to be that girl for my brother's books. She is indeed that girl with all the fury and compassion we expect. I think that's a really beautiful thread about the tone. I like that they're gonna still make it sad and make it dark and scary. He thinks his mom is dead.
Yeah.
She's kidnapped to the underworld. He has to go on this huge quest at 12 years old. This is a big deal. It's dark and it's scary. But Percy is also very sarcastic. He uses humor to lighten the mood, to just react to things. And his world is full of ridiculous things like centaurs and minotaurs and like all this other stuff going on. So I'm really not worried about it. I think that the trailer was a little somber.
Yeah.
Because I think it's meant to be like, okay, this is a dangerous world. And we didn't get any dialogue. So we didn't get any of... of Percy's humor, but that stuff will come later. Yeah. So I'm not worried.
I agree. The tone they kind of took with the trailer is, listen, you don't want to be a demigod. Trust me. I'm doing it or have done it. We don't know when this comes into play, but you don't want to do this. Trust me. It's not as much fun as it looks. Like, they couldn't go from that to Percy tripping over a log or something. You know what I mean? Like, you can't intercut that. So they went with a tone for the trailer. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I get it. Honestly, I'm in love with it.
And that tone sets up how much of an epic story this is.
Yeah.
It kind of shows the scale of it, which I think is important for our first look at it. So
absolutely agree. I think if they had gone funnier for this trailer, it might have given people the wrong impression of how big and serious this story really is. Parents die. Friends die. You know, monsters are killed in front of you. Things, big weapons are scary and happen in this series. So I like that they kind of went on more on the serious side of things. And eventually, I'm sure in further trailers and things, we'll get a bit of the humor too.
Yeah, I agree. I also wanted to let everybody know that Percy Jackson and the Olympians has a page on Disney Plus now. We can go to our Disney Plus and see the page on there. Not everybody will be able to, depending on what country you're from, but those in the U.S., it's definitely there. And the release date is listed as 2024, which is much later than we wanted it to be, but I'd rather have this show done right than have it rushed at all, so I'll wait. There's plenty of stuff going on prior to that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I mean, there is a distinct possibility with a release date like that, depending on how the show develops, I'm not saying we've gotten one, and I'm not saying we will get one, but I'm saying there's a possibility that if Disney sees what they've got and sees the reaction to it, that they start greenlighting future seasons and they work ahead so that maybe, if we get this in 2024, maybe we don't have to wait more than a year to get the next one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if they start to see that they really have a massive audience for this and they need to make more seasons, just like Rick has kind of hinted that things are going well and he thinks we might get more.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a possibility that this is kind of a cautious thing. Like, let's list the release date as 2024 so that we can get ahead and get the kids filming season two, maybe, before we even show season one, so that the wait isn't as bad. Yeah. So I'm hoping it's maybe something like
that, too. I super agree with that. I feel like that is definitely a possibility. If for no other reason, and there are a lot of reasons, but if for no other reason, then they're going to want to keep the kids as close to those ages as possible. So they're going to want to keep kind of constantly working as quickly as they can.
Absolutely.
Because if it's a year and a half to 2 years between each season, those kids are going to be in their 30s by the time it's done.
I mean, we all watch Stranger Things, right?
Yeah.
We've seen those kids. They started at the right ages, but they took a year between seasons, and they quickly grew to where they had to move the story. They had to move these kids into their teens because they had 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds on their hands and they don't look 10 anymore, you know? Yeah. So that's a really good point. Like, really good point.
Yeah. So we'll see. 2024 is a long ways away, but we've got the Solangelo book and we've got, you know, a lot of other things going on in the meantime. So I'm not too worried about it.
We'll make it. I promise we'll make it together.
I wanted to also share Nicholas Hammond's response to us on Twitter. He talked a little bit about, like, the owls and stuff, and with Rick's blog, we kind of got an answer to that. But I just liked that he said, "It does indeed get better with rewatches for me. Too overwhelming at the start. Emotions just vanished." I kind of feel that. I was just, like, watching it and trying to absorb as much as I could. And live tweeting stuff, too. And I was like, this is not working.
Yeah.
I didn't think of adapting the opening lines for a trailer, but it's so sensible. It makes me even more curious how the show itself will open, which I think is a really interesting, like, idea. Are they going to open on Percy going to the museum, or even before that, is he sees Mr. Bruner and Grover, or he overhears them talking at school, right? Like,
yes.
I think that's, like, in the
before
first,
before the field trip.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
because
I'm
the field
sure
trip is when everything starts to kick off. So will they start off in the school with Mr. Bruner and Grover, or will we get, like, maybe some outside force, or, like, a prequel cool kind of thing, because in the movie we see a little bit of Poseidon and Zeus meeting.
Yeah.
So will we get something like more omnipotent? Is that the right word? Yeah, like the outside forces, like distant third person versus like close Percy. We'll just have to see. But that's a very interesting question to kind of keep mulling over.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to turn it over to Kristen now. We are tackling The Last Olympian, Chapter 4.
Yes, we are on Chapter 4 of The Last Olympian, entitled We Burn a Metal Shroud. Percy has another dream/visitation thing, and this time he's seeing Rachel Elizabeth Dare. She's painting in her bedroom and hoping beyond hope that the vivid scenes she's painting from her dreams aren't harbingers or anything. They certainly seem pretty... What is the word? Prophetic. Anyway, she also has a bit of a fight with her dad when she tells him that Percy probs won't be joining them on vacay. Anywho, Percy wakes up and eats breakfast by his lonesome at the Poseidon table. Then he and Annabeth do cabin inspection. After giving Percy a 3, Aphrodite a 5, and they stumble across the Apollo-Ares cabin feud. Percy learns from Annabeth that the two cabins are fighting over possession of a flying chariot acquired in battle in Philadelphia. Annabeth's hopeful the two sides will see reason, but Percy is less than convinced. They march on to inspect the Athena cabin, and the place is sparkling clean except for Annabeth's bunk. She gives her cabin a 3 due to a sloppy head counselor and keeps moving. As they head to the big house, Percy reads through some more of Chiron's reports, including one from someone trying to reach Grover. He's been incommunicado lately, and everyone's just hoping everything's okay. As soon as the discussion moves away from Grover, Annabeth and Percy start talking battle strategy, which leads into them fighting because Percy is clearly a coward. Clearly. They burn Beckendorf's metal shroud, and it does, in fact, burn, which is impressive magic. Percy approaches Selena, who is doing better in her grief but still mourning. Percy then does his best to convince Clarice to drop the silly games with Apollo, but she refuses to budge. The chapter ends with Percy in search of a break and some time with an old friend in the sword fighting arena. Okay, so there's quite a bit that kind of happens in this chapter.
Yeah.
But let's kick it off. I mean, we need to talk about Rachel Elizabeth there, but I guess we should talk about prophecy count.
Yeah, prophecy count number 24. We have Percy seeing Rachel, who has been seeing things. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So since we don't actually know how many things she's seen, we can't really count them as prophecies yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's no specific prophecy. She's been drawing some things.
Yes.
So that's curious. And
unveils them to Percy unknowingly.
Yeah.
Although she does say, like, Percy, what do you think? And it's just her, like, waxing... Not nostalgic, but, like, poetic almost, like, thinking, like, what would Percy say if he was here?
Right.
But it is kind of funny that he's basically seeing these as she's looking at them herself, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she has been having some dreams, and they have some interesting imagery, and there's one that particularly kind of sells you that these are probably visions and not just her having crazy dreams. And it's that she has a painting of Luke. He's a child, and it's like the Battle of Manhattan. Like, she has these visions of Luke that she doesn't know Luke. Yeah. So how could she be drawing him unless she was having some sort of vision of him?
And the big thing is that she's never seen Luke as a child. So
that too. Yeah,
her having a perfect replica of him as a child is very strange. And then, just seeing everybody kind of gathered in New York City with all of their weapons and stuff. We know that this is the Battle of Manhattan coming, but Percy still, you know, he's like, okay, that's interesting and maybe something we should think about, but he doesn't really know what's going on either. But from this scene, just the thing that really jumps out to me, other than Rachel's relationship with her father and kind of their dynamic, which isn't great, is that the bad dreams and the headaches. Because this is very clearly, I think this is what Rachel wanted to tell him in chapter one. Like, some weird things have been going on. I've been seeing stuff. Maybe you want to come check out this painting because I'm a little concerned.
Is this some of your stuff? Is this your world leaking into my brain? Because I'm going to beat you up.
Yeah.
Pretty much is kind of the impression.
And she's very mad at Percy for being a demigod and going off on his demigod quests, which I don't really blame her for, but also, like, I think some people in this book need to cut Percy some slack because he's under a lot of pressure right now and he thinks he's gonna die. And I think everybody should be a little bit nicer to him. Just throwing that out there.
I 100% agree. I think, first of all, Rachel doesn't actually know, A, that Percy's seeing any of this, but B, she doesn't actually know that he's, like, gonna die. Like, she doesn't know the prophecy. I mean, Annabeth and Chiron and so many other people know kind of what Percy's up against. I don't think Rachel has a really clear picture, but she does, she has seen everything that she saw in the labyrinth. So, like, I think she does get how much pressure's on Percy, so I do think it's a little unfair that she wants him to, like, go on vacay with her and do all of this stuff, and, you know, she has things she wants to do with Percy, and it's like, he's got a lot of stuff to deal with, and I don't necessarily think it's fair of her to expect things like that from
him. Yeah. You're right. I don't think she really understands the scope of what's going on, even if she has an idea that, like, things are kind of dangerous and there's war brewing and stuff. I think she still thinks that Percy can just say no and just, like, leave everybody behind and protect himself. But it's more of Annabeth's reactions that kind of bothered me in this chapter. Not that I necessarily blame her, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we will. Okay, so yeah, the next step on this journey we should probably talk about is Percy and Annabeth, after breakfast, do their cabin inspections. And Percy is also checking reports from Chiron as they walk. So they're kind of combining their chores and doing them together, which I think is cute. I thought
that was so cute because they haven't really been talking that much over the summer and things have been really awkward, but they still wanted to do their chores together because it's boring and it's just easier if they do it together. And I was like, okay, so there's still, you know, this desire to be together, to be around each other. And Percy especially is just like, wow, she's so beautiful. Wow, I just can't stop staring at her. And he's falling hard. Yeah. And I think, you know, Annabeth is too, but she's a little more emotional about it. And she gets angrier much faster.
Yeah. Oh, teenagers. Like, there's nothing like it. So as they're doing their chores, they visit Percy's cabin, they visit Aphrodite, and everything's kind of as you would expect, because Percy's is not clean and Aphrodite's is spotless, you know, as it is. The next cabin they kind of come up to is the Ares-Apollo area, and they are flying this chariot around. I believe the Apollo cabin has possession of the chariot.
I think so, yeah.
Because Ares wants it. Right. They think it belongs to them. The Apollo cabin actually technically won it, but Ares planned the entire battle, so they feel like they have claim to it, and hence all of this craziness that ends with Clarice refusing to help, which is the bigger picture. Like, nobody actually, you know, Annabeth and Percy don't really care who gets the chariot. They're just saying, Clarice, you definitely should not be holding us hostage over this. Clarice is using it to make a bigger point.
Yeah, and her bigger point is basically that, you know, the Ares cabin has been getting dissed too often, and she wants some respect, and she's kind of holding her ground over this one thing. But I kind of feel like there's something bigger going on here, that it's not just, like, yeah, she probably does want the chariot, it's a really cool thing to have, but it just feels like she knows what's going on. She knows Cronus is coming. She knows that they need her to fight him. And even Percy is like, you're really going to let us get killed over this? And she's like, I want respect. But it just feels like such a bigger picture than that. And I don't know if we're missing something or if it's more along the lines of Ares has worked against the other Olympians before. And so I feel like Ares and Ares' children kind of don't feel like they belong with the other ones. And this is about more than just the flying chariot. It's about, like, do you actually want us on our side? Like, do you care about us? Or do you just want us because we're good fighters, kind of thing? And if that's the ground that Clarice is holding, I can respect that, even though the timing is very, very bad.
The other thing, because there's a lot going into this. I mean, I understand Clarice's perspective on all of this. Like, I get why she's doing this, why she's using it now. She actually has some ground to leverage her cabin at the moment. Like, if they didn't need them for a battle, they would not be taking her seriously at all.
That's true.
And so I get why she's taking advantage of this situation to try and make a point. But at the same time, we have to remember how Aries actually feels about the whole thing. We don't necessarily know which side Aries is on all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I can see why the Aries cabin doesn't always get the respect they think they deserve, because Aries is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
I get that they're his kids and they are people, they're demigods, they have their own opinions, and clearly they're going to fight for camp because they love camp. But, like, I get that there's a lot going on here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's dynamics between how Aries fits in with Percy and the world and how Clarice deals with them and Clarice's relationships with everybody and then all the other Aries campers. So it's just a very complicated situation.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And it's not resolved. We leave it basically in the same place we found it. Yeah, and pretty we'll much. Just keep moving on until eventually something changes, which I'm sure it will pretty soon. Maybe. I don't know. Okay, so the next thing is they get to Athena's cabin, is where this whole thing stems from.
Yeah.
And I have to say, and I'm giving this away and I don't even care, this is my favorite moment.
Oh, because okay.
It's the bit where, I'm just going to talk about it now because I don't want to wait. It's the bit where they enter the cabin and there's like a couple of other campers in there when they walk in, and he's like, yeah, you know, everything's, you know, straight and clean and gorgeous. And then he looks over at Annabeth's bed and is like, we were afraid to touch your notes. And I'm like, I would be too.
Yeah.
You don't touch Annabeth's notes. He's like, we were afraid to touch your notes, but otherwise everything's clean. And, you know, and Annabeth's a little embarrassed. And then the camper makes like a, we're gonna leave you guys, and like takes off. And that's why this is my favorite moment, is because everybody in camp realizes that they're totally like into each other, and they haven't even had a conversation about it. Like, the other Athena campers are conspiring to leave them alone in a cabin, which is not a thing you do, apparently, according to Percy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love the whole, like, tension of this moment, because it's like, we're not really supposed to be alone in this cabin, but what are they gonna do? Like, yeah, what are we gonna do? We're at war.
And this is basically, so this is actually also my favorite moment, because this is about the same time that Percy keeps thinking about, oh my gosh, Annabeth is so beautiful, and, you know, they weren't meant to be alone in that cabin, and that's been coming up a lot lately with Selena and Charlie, because, you know, they're dating and everything. And then he goes into godly DNA and basically tells us that gods don't have DNA. So dating someone from a different cabin is totally acceptable. It's not like you're dating your cousin or anything like right. that, because the god DNA doesn't really count. However, you don't date somebody from your same cabin, because it's kind of like a half-brother or half-sister or something like that. And that's a little bit more gross. Like, nobody does that, even though gods don't have DNA. Yeah. But, I mean, that's understandable, I guess.
I can see the logic.
Yeah, so can I.
Like,
but it was just so funny having this mini breakdown of, like, godly DNA, and Percy being like, it's not weird that I want to date Annabeth, because, like, we have different godly parents, and godly DNA doesn't actually exist. So, like, it's totally fine. I'm not weird or gross or anything.
Like, it would be weird if I wanted to date Tyson. It's not weird if I want to date Annabeth. Yeah. Okay? All right? That's what we're doing here. All right? Yeah. So now I'm gonna, talk some more about this pretty girl that I'm completely obsessed with. Anyway. So that was honestly a cute little moment, and Percy and Annabeth kind of have a moment there, and Annabeth's hinting at something, and Percy is completely oblivious to what she's hinting at, but she doesn't get mad at him, she just kind of, like, leaves it be. You can see the eye roll, you can feel it coming off the page. She's definitely rolling her eyes behind his back, like, why doesn't he just say something?
Yeah.
Like, why are we still dancing around this? Like, yeah. But it's cute, whatever, I don't care. So then they make their way up to the big house to turn in Chiron's reports. Percy's gonna give him, you know, a summation of what he got. And one of the messages is from someone who is trying to get in touch with Grover. And yes, I noticed this too. It's a letter from Gleason Hedge.
I did not know that he was in this series.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah, that he was mentioned. So that's actually a really cool crossover to the next series. I love that.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a big fan. And I actually highlighted the majority of the message, so I'll read it really quick, just because I do like the idea of these messages coming over. And it says, "Dear Grover, woods outside Toronto attacked by giant evil badger. Tried to do as you suggested and summon power of Pan. No effect. Many naiads trees destroyed. Retreating to Ottawa, please advise. Where are you, Gleason Hedge, protector?" And I just, reading the Gleason Hedge at the bottom, you're like, wait, what? And it just, yeah. So it's a nice little tie-in before we even knew it was a tie-in. Yeah. And
the sad thing, though, is that they also kind of talk about the fact that Grover has been spreading the word of Pan, but he's also been kind of drifting farther and farther away from them. He's trying to spread this word. The council is still ostracizing him, and he doesn't really care, which, you know, go Grover, good for him.
Yeah.
But Percy hasn't felt any sort of that connection with him through their empathy link in so long that, you know, it's been like 2 months since they've heard of him. He only come back to like visit Juniper once in a while, but he's basically been gone. So that's kind of sad and a little scary, but
yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's one of those things like changing schools when you change to high school or when you change schools to, you know, college or whatever. It's hard to kind of say goodbye to friends that have to keep moving on in their life. And I feel like that's a little bit of kind of what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, Grover has grown bigger than camp at this point.
Yeah.
And yes, there's a big battle coming and he's well aware of what's at stake and what's going on, but he has bigger things he has to do.
It's not like he's doing this for fun. Like, this is a necessary part of his life and existence. Yeah. So
he's got a higher calling, and he can't ignore it just because he wants to be there with Percy and Annabeth.
Exactly.
So, yeah, hopefully we will get some news on Grover soon. That's about all I can say. And it's somewhere around here where Annabeth and Percy get in a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, Annabeth is calling Percy a coward because he hasn't confronted what's clearly going on.
Yeah.
And Percy is being naively oblivious and doing, honest to God, I kind of feel like he's doing it on purpose to himself.
Oh,
like, he's not treating
like
her.
Like, he doesn't want to think about it.
Right. He knows he's going to die. And, like, he loves what him and Annabeth have. So I feel like he is not admitting to himself that he really, really likes her. He's just trying to enjoy their time together because he doesn't know if in a week he's going to still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he is a bit naively just saying, I'm not going to deal with it. I don't have to deal with it. If I don't deal with it, then, you know, then, oh, well, too bad. You know, I think he's just kind of trying to keep the stakes where they are as opposed to making his potential death even worse. And
right.
I do think that's
so crazy. My feelings on all of this is that I am kind of mad at Annabeth because she's mad at Percy for not talking to her about his feelings for her. But she's not exactly doing it to him either. She is not being direct at all. She's leaving him openings, but that's not the same thing as coming out and telling him how she feels.
Yes.
And her feelings are definitely hurt. She calls him a coward about something else entirely. Basically says that he runs away when things get tough. And that's super not fair to, like, put on him.
Yeah.
And he's dealing with so much right now. And she knows, unlike Rachel, she knows what that prophecy says. And for her to get mad at him and not be there to support him just because he's not saying, hey, I really like you, makes me very frustrated. But I'm not here for Annabeth's slander. And I know that her feelings are hurt, and she's also very scared, and she's got a lot of things that she's dealing with, not only in terms of the battle, but, like, she could be losing her best friend, and that sucks for her, too. And so I'm not going to blame her for kind of blowing up like this, but I do wish that she had handled it better.
Teenage emotions are hard.
Especially when it comes to, like, romance and stuff, like,
right, and that's what I mean, like, admitting to yourself that you really like this guy that's been your friend and you've been calling him seaweed brain for the last, you know, 3 years or 4 years or whatever. Like, it's hard to kind of make that leap. It's hard to be the one to say, hey, I've got feelings. So it's easier to call your friend a coward and say, why haven't you told me, you know, come on, it's all your fault, than look at yourself and say, I really should just tell him myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It's hard. It's just hard. Mm-hmm. Growing up is hard.
I agree. A random thing that I noticed, by the way, was when they were actually burning the shroud, which we didn't really talk about.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, you know, there's not much to say.
Yeah.
They're burning the shroud and the flames are black. And Percy says, the campfire flames reflect the camper's mood, and lately it's been black because everyone's very sad and scared and everything like that. Have we ever heard this before?
Have we ever heard
that the campfire flames reflect the camper's moods? Because I don't remember it anywhere.
No.
And if it was mentioned, I'm wondering if it was like book one and then just hasn't come up again. But I don't remember hearing this at any point.
Yeah.
However, I love it. I think this is a great visual. Like when they're happy, maybe they're like pink or red or, you know, like a bright, like orangey.
I was going to say like a perfect campfire. So it's orangey and just warm. Yeah. And yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's still kind of cool, and by having black flames because everyone's sad and scared, like, that would give you a good visual.
Like, if they're all just, if they're less scared and they're more sad, are they blue? Like,
maybe, yeah. Although I love blue flames. I mean, they look cool, so.
So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting fact and something I definitely have not heard.
Yeah.
Like, thought about.
I wonder if they'll do it for the show, you know? If that's a thing that's always been in Rick's mind where he sees that all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you also have a special note in here about Clarice and Percy.
Yeah, just that Percy tries to cash in his favor with Clarice to get her to knock it off about the flying chariot and come help them flight. And she won't even do it for that. She still refuses, which is why I'm like, it's got to be a bigger deal. It's got to be about something just more than getting that flying chariot. Yeah. So
we didn't spend a lot of time on it, but they do burn Beckendorf's shroud, which is made of like metal, like basically like chainmail.
Yeah.
And it does melt, which Percy's like kind of amazed by. And I do love the visual of like even his metal shroud melts because they need it to, because it's his shroud and that's what happens.
Yeah.
And Percy talks to Selena and Clarice around the campfire. I think that's when he tries to cash in his favor.
Yeah.
And she has no interest in it. But it's not a lot goes on in that scene, so we'll just kind of let that go.
Yeah, that's sort of like, you know, to be continued.
Yeah.
This little thread throughout.
Agreed. Yes. So that pretty much wraps up the chapter, and I think we should probably do favorite quotes. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, mine is when they're inspecting the Aphrodite cabin and Selena is kind of crying and eating some bonbons from her father, and Percy's like, are they any good? And she's like, yeah, they kind of taste like cardboard. And he says, I didn't have anything against cardboard, so I tried one. And I was like, that's a good attitude. Like, I just thought it was really funny.
It also just screams teenage boy food. I'll eat food. I'll try it. Cardboard's not offensive.
Yeah.
I'll try it. If you said it tastes like rotten fish, I'm not going to try it, but cardboard's not too bad.
Cardboard's fine.
Love it. Mine actually comes from Rachel Elizabeth Dare as she's painting in her studio in Percy's vision, and she says, demigods, Rachel muttered as she threw another dart at the canvas, and their stupid quests. There's just something about her, like, fuming in her room, painting scenes of death and destruction that are about to come, and she's sitting here thinking about Percy, like, why am I painting all this stuff? It's all his fault.
Yeah.
I wasn't involved in any of this until he dragged me into it. Now I'm having visions, and I don't know what they are, and he wouldn't let me talk about it, and he's gone now. And, like, you can see that she's kind of spiraling, and it's just like, oh, Rachel, it's gonna be okay. You're gonna have a purpose, and I think you're gonna like your purpose, so... Just hang in there.
Her whole world is getting turned upside down right now, and she's very much alone in it at the moment. She won't be forever, but for now, it's got to be pretty scary for her.
It's not like Percy, who found out he was a demigod and then got whisked away to camp full of demigods where everybody helped him and told him what to do. She's literally by herself in her bedroom trying to figure out what is happening.
Yeah.
And it would be scary and crazy, yeah. And we already kind of talked about our favorite moments, but mine is the Athena camper leaving Percy and Annabeth alone, and like just the tension that happened after that. It was kind of funny. So.
And mine was Percy explaining the god DNA because it's hilarious.
It's just great. So great. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com.
We are home to three other podcasts. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning into Rewatchable, which has covered series like Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, and Angel, and many more. Most recently, we've also discussed all four Matrix movies. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that features our biggest hypes and gripes in fandom and life, and we even post interviews with our favorite creators. Lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has previously discussed every episode of the show, conducted many interviews with the cast and crew, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews really help others to find us, and that would be amazing. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content or episodes you might want to see in any of these places. We love hearing from you guys, so please do. We did get a bit of feedback that was not trailer related this week. Before D23, we got a lovely message from Harl Eloco at EL_Harl, and I'll let Karen read the actual message.
So they said, I just finished the first chapter of the Prophecy Podcast, and wow, they are incredible. The energy, the love to the series and universe, the way they share it. Maybe I cry a couple of times because of happiness. If you like Percy, do yourself a favor and listen to them. And I just thought that was so nice.
I, like, teared up a little bit. I was like, thank you for listening to our show.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate it so much.
I'm glad that people like when we go a little bit overboard with our analysis. And stuff like that, because honestly, that's why we're here. We got to have some outlet for it. So,
oh yeah,
hopefully it'll be for you guys to enjoy.
We have a lot of fun, but it's a lot of fun knowing you guys are having fun listening as well. Yeah. So I really, really love hearing when you guys are having a good time, or when there's an episode you really like, or anything like that. It's it's just really invigorating, and it gets you that much more excited to dive into our next set of episodes or whatever we've got going on. It's really good fun. So we thank you so much, L_Harl. Thank you for reaching out. Next week is our 50th episode.
Yes.
We don't know what we're doing yet.
We don't.
We want to do something a little special, but we're not entirely sure what that's going to be. So if you have any ideas of things that we should be doing for our 50th episode, please reach out to us anywhere and let us know fun things that we could do. If not, we will be coming up with something. We're just not sure quite what yet.
Yeah, keep an eye on our Twitter. I know we've been slacking a little bit with these, like, what we're doing next week thing, but life's been a little
chaotic.
It's been a little chaotic recently, so we're doing our best, and we hope that you guys will just stick with us. We'll get back on, like, a good schedule here soon.
I think some of this was caused by D23. We knew it was coming. Like, we found out that we were going to be getting something, and so it was like, well, we can't really plan an episode, but we also want to cover it in an episode. And then we're also kind of working with Roseanne A. Brown's book, and we're trying to figure out where that fits in our schedule. So it's just making things a little unpredictable right now.
Yeah.
But we will get it all figured out for sure. And we will be celebrating 50 episodes, which feels insane.
It does. Really, I know. I can't believe it's already at 50.
Which we'll surely say next week as well. So I'll cut it off there and say, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.